Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Mad Money Machine. Excuse me, long-time listeners, for just one second while I introduce myself to the first-timers. My name is Paul Douglas Boyer. This show started out as a kind of a fan site for Jim Cramer's Mad Money. Over the course of the past year, I have learned that picking stocks is not the way to invest. Sure, picking stocks is fun, and if you've got a little bit of mad money laying around that you will just want to have some fun with, then that's okay. Most people, though, I think, are interested in making money with an appropriate level of risk, because we all know that risk is the source of returns, right? Well, welcome, first-time listeners, to the Mad Money Machine, and welcome back, faithful listeners. Thank you so much. On with show 52 for the middle of February. Well, all right, Mr. Smarty Pants, if picking stocks is not the way to invest, then what is? On this show, we're going to look to the thoughts, writings, and experiences of some deep people to help us find the answer.
I always thought it would be deep if I could write about the trees, because that's what deep people do. I'd really write about the world of wars or bars, perhaps a girl with words and be a forest.
Coming up later in the show, we'll find out what deep thinker said this. Sooner than I dared expect, my explicit prayer has been answered. There is coming to market something called the First Index Investment Trust, offering extremely low portfolio turnover, and best of all, giving the broadest diversification needed to maximize mean return with minimum portfolio variance and volatility. Also coming up later in the show, what is it that Jim Cramer and John Bogle could possibly agree upon when it comes to investing? I'll talk about how Frank Barnico beat me to the punch on reviewing Cramer's performance. And did I mention that the Mad Money Machine is sponsored, proud to be sponsored by, Index Funds Advisors at IFA.com. They're not just index funds, they're advisors. I've got a tool in the crib for you. We'll take a spin at Guru Roulette and the second annual Mad Money Machine Match Play Golf Classic. All that, all of that, and more on the Mad Money Machine. That's Matthew Ebel with Trees from the PodSafe, yes, PodSafe Music Network. Hello, I'm Buffett Warrington. We'll get you back to your regularly scheduled program on ESPN, Federation Curling, after this update to the 85th Annual Mad Money Machine Match Play Golf Classic. Glad you could join us on this beautiful day in the lovely Cotswolds, Hertfordshire, New Wellesham, England. We're here at the final round of what should again prove to be a classic matchup.
Could we at least shut the door? And birds are giving me a headache. Thank you.
I'm joined, as always, in the broadcast booth by our very own Graham Benjaminson. Graham, tell us about this matchup.
Thank you very much, Buffett. It is indeed a pleasure to be with you here again in Cotswold Surfers in Belgium. This contest features two very opposite types of players. The James Cramer-influenced portfolio of average hits it long off the tee, but quite often erratic. He displays an arrogance that reminds me of another brash player, John Daly. His opponent, the IFA Index Folio 100, won't win any longest drive competitions, but by gosh, Buffett, does he ever hit it straight down the center.
Yes, he does, Graham. Well, after the first couple of holes, the Kramer portfolio ain't doing so good. He's bogeyed the first and second holes and stands at 0.03%. Index Folio 100, on the other hand, has eagled both the first two holes and is up 3.24%. On hole number one, a routine par four, he split the fairway and then amazingly holed it from 90 yards out. Then on that par 5 double dogleg left into an island green, he again holed it from 60 yards out, so he'll be first off the tee here at the third, Graham. Tell us about this third hole.
The third hole is a straightaway par 4 into an undulating green surrounded by deep bunkers. The fairway pinches in very tightly for the longest drivers, so most players notch it down a bit in order to stay safe.
The Index Folio 100 steps up to the tee. Graham, this guy is so consistent. He's always in contention and usually wins in these head-to-head matches, but never seems to win in the big crowd. He'll come in second or third in almost every tournament he enters. What's he got to do to take home the trophy?
That's right, Buffett. The Index Folio 100 is actually one of the tour's money leaders over the years and has done so without ever actually winning a big tournament. His consistency is what makes him money. He says he doesn't mind it one bit that his mantelpiece has fewer trophies on display. But of course, Buffett, we know that his mantelpiece proudly displays the trophy from last year's Madman Machine Match Play Golf Classic.
That's right, Graham. Index Folio 100 came in with 22.5% last year, and the Kramer portfolio stumbled off the last green after losing 0.2%. The Index Folio 100 is approaching the tee. Graham, he's taken a 5-iron out of his bag to hit on this par 4. What's the strategy behind that?
Well, as I mentioned, the Index Folio 100 is the most consistent player on the tour. Always straight, always right there. His strategy is basically to never get into any big trouble. And if he can do that, he believes he's got the best chance out there on this circuit.
And what's he got in the bag?
Strangely, he doesn't carry any woods or utility clubs. Everything is a medium to long iron, Buffett. Rather boring. Yet the results speak for themselves. He hits large cap, small cap, micro cap, reet, three varieties each of international and emerging market. And who can quibble with the results, as he was last year's tour money winner?
The Index Folio 100 is ready to hit. It's a beautiful floating shot, straight as a gun barrel down the fairway. And the distance is respectable. Graham, what are his chances from there?
He's left himself in perfect position once again, Buffett. Not much drama in watching this one play.
The Kramer-influenced portfolio averages on the tee. Graham, what's he got in the bag?
He has an odd assortment of clubs, mostly anything that he can use to try to hit the ball a long, long way. He has every one of his clubs de-lofted in order to increase their distances. Even his pitching wedge, Buffett, is about the same loft as your 7-iron.
Holy cow! Well, the Kramer portfolio is ready to hit. Oh, my golly, Graham, that ball is long, but veering left. Oh, where did it end up?
Buffett, he has hit an oak tree on the left side of the fairway, and his ball has ricocheted directly back toward where he is standing. Ironic that in reaching for length, his lack of accuracy has cost him a great deal of length.
Well, as long as he has a length on his next shot, I suppose he can afford it. He'll be up next. He's got about 250 yards to the green from there, though. For Graham Benjaminson, this is Buffett Warrington. We'll get you back to your Federation Curling on ESPN. Let's play a round of the world's favorite game, Guru Roulette. I've replaced the numbers on a roulette wheel with the names of investment gurus. I'll spin the wheel and roll the marble, and for the selected guru, give you a little background on their investment philosophy. Here we go. And the winner this time on Mad Money Machine Show 52 is Paul Samuelson. Paul Samuelson, born May 15th, 1915. And still alive, is an American economist known for his work in many fields of economics. He was the first American to win the Nobel Prize in economics. His famous textbook, Economics, was published in 1948. He's probably the most famous economist of our time.
An impressive collection of his research from 1937 to 1986 contains 388 articles that span 4,665 pages. Paul Samuelson's findings can be summarized as follows. Market prices are the best estimates of value. Price changes follow random patterns, and future stock prices are unpredictable. And yes, the quote I read earlier is from Paul Samuelson. One of Samuelson's idols was Louis Bachelier, the unappreciated genius who first wrote about random prices over a century ago. Samuelson discovered Bachelier's paper from 1900 in a French library. Like many others, Samuelson proved, expanded, and refined Bachelier's discovery. In Samuelson's 1965 paper, Proof That Properly Anticipated Prices Fluctuate Randomly, he describes shadow prices, or true values of a security. Samuelson suggests that the best estimate of the true value of a security is the price that is set in the marketplace every minute of every trading day. Although these prices may not be the precise true value, no other estimate is likely to be more accurate than what buyers and sellers agree upon in the marketplace. Of course, there's the opposing view of investment professionals who believe that there are constant differences between the market price and the true value of securities, and that those differences can result in future profits for the skilled money manager. Samuelson insists that there are no easy pickings and no sure gains. Generally speaking, Paul Samuelson has contributed more than any other contemporary economist to raising the analytical and methodological level in economic science. There's something in people. You might even call it a little bit of gambling instinct, Samuelson says. They want to be interested in the process of investing, and it's traditionally been difficult to get too jazzed up about indexing. Well, still, it's hard to argue with science. Samuelson's wisdom is reflected in his words, "Investing should be dull, like watching paint dry or grass grow. If you want excitement, take $800 and go to Las Vegas. It's not easy to get rich in Las Vegas, at Churchill Downs, or at the local Merrill Lynch office." Well, congratulations, Paul Samuelson. You're the guru on Madman Machine Show 52. Boy, now this is a frequently asked question. What is the difference between an ETF and a mutual fund? Well, once and for all, we're going to provide the answer.
Staring right in the face is the answer.
Well, there are a lot of ways to slice up the answer to that question, and the way I'm going to slice it this time is to talk about two exactly similar funds: Vanguard's Total Stock Market Index Mutual Fund and Vanguard's Total Stock Market ETF. The ticker symbols for these are VTSMX and VTI, respectively. So first of all, how do you buy one of these funds? For the mutual fund, you need an account somewhere, preferably at Vanguard itself. Then to buy it, you just send them money. No fee is charged to buy it, no commissions. For the exchange-traded fund, you need a stock-trading brokerage account, for example, Ameritrade, Schwab, Scottrade, Fidelity, or whatever. To buy some shares of the ETF, you must pay a commission each time, and it's typically between $4 at the very low end up to $25 or more at the high end. Mine is $8 per trade. What price do you get the fund at, with the shares at, when you buy one of these? For the mutual fund, you get the day's closing price at 4 o'clock. For the exchange-traded fund, you get whatever the price was when you made the trade when the stock market is open between 9:30 and 4 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. And for the exchange-traded fund, you can play all kinds of tricks like you can with stocks, such as limit orders or market orders or whatever. So what are the expenses internal to the fund? According to Morningstar.com, for Vanguard's Total Stock Market Index Mutual Fund, the expenses ratio is 0.19%, very low. And the exchange-traded fund, VTI, is 0.07%, even a little bit lower. What about taxes? Since the Mutual fund is a passively managed index. There is low turnover of stocks within the fund. Therefore, the capital gains taxes you must pay are on that each year are low. Now, some other mutual funds have a higher turnover. You know, like actively managed funds, they're going to have a turnover within the fund, and they make you pay more taxes. ETFs, though, are usually structured in a way that the turnover is hidden, and you don't pay capital gains taxes until you sell it. Even actively managed exchange-traded funds hide the capital gains within that structure somehow. How about dividends? Basically the same treatment on both funds. Selling. When you sell a mutual fund, you get that day's closing price of the fund. When you sell an exchange-traded fund, you get the market price during the trading day, and you pay the trading commission. The bottom line is if you're adding money frequently and you plan to take it out in installments, the mutual fund is the way to go. If you don't have a brokerage account, the mutual fund is the way to go. And a further benefit of mutual funds, you're not enticed to make trades like you might in an ETF. Well, but if you already have a brokerage account and you're investing a large plop of money all at once and you're just going to leave it there forever, an ETF is worth considering. But I think for most people, it's like playing with fire, as you'll see in a few minutes. ETFs can be dangerous. You don't want to buy them to play sectors. You don't want to buy them to time the market. Probably about 9 ETFs or mutual funds is all you need to cover all the possibilities in the world's equity markets. Well, there you have it. That's it. That's the answer.
Staring you right in the face. Is the answer.
So what is it that Jim Cramer and John Bogle, the former Vanguard chairman, agree on? I've got a link to Jim Cramer video at his thestreet.com website. In this video, Aaron Task interviews him, and Jim says he thinks that ETFs are part of the corrupt process that he has seen all his career on Wall Street. He says they all need to create new product in order to make more money. The commissions are driving the invention. He says that having been the leader in his sales group in creating product, he did far better than anyone else in creating commission because he created a lot of product. He says the only free lunch is diversification, and ETFs, get this, are anti-diversification. Why? Because, he says, that you're buying them all in one thing. You're buying them all in one sector. For example, the OIH he talks about, which is the oil services holders. Jim says basically that hedge funds move the OIH, the oil services holders ETFs, and the individual investor can't keep up with the manipulations of it. Getting back to corrupt Wall Street, he says he has never heard this phrase in his history on Wall Street. How can I help the public? He says investors should avoid ETFs because if you want to build a portfolio of ETFs, you're basically just in a mutual fund. Well, duh. He says the notion of going to buy index funds is completely and utterly preposterous given the nature of the returns he's been generating on his show. But you could argue that with ActionAlertsPlus.com, you have to do what he says before he does it, giving you much better performance than what he does. Mm-hmm. He says ETFs don't make any sense. Well, what does John Bogle say about ETFs? In the February 9th Wall Street Journal opinion page, he says that ETFs are a mutant form of index funds. They can be solid competitors to classic index mutual funds if they're used properly. But the problem with most ETFs is the emphasis on trading them. He says out of the 690 exchange-traded funds, including some that are still in registration, only 12 existing today represent broad market segments like the S&P 500 or total stock market indexes. This is what Cramer was talking about when he criticized them as being anti-diversified. Bogle says that performance-chasing investors in specialized ETFs are their own worst enemies. After all the extra costs, added taxes, selection challenges, and timing risks, the typical ETF investor has absolutely no idea what relationship his investment return will bear to the return earned by the stock market. Now, earlier I forgot to mention that ETFs are subject to bid-ask spreads that are found in individual stocks. This is a source of fees for the brokers. Bottom line, Bogle says, is that the truism that says the more that the financial intermediaries take, the less the clients make, remains in effect. He says that serious and intelligent investors ought to beware of moving their investments out of classic index funds. Classic index funds are focused on low cost, broad diversification, and long-term buy and hold strategies, whereas ETFs have the overlay of costs, limited diversification, and short-term trading strategies. Well, there's a rarity, Cramer and Bogle agreeing on something. Now, Mr. Bogle has a book coming out next month called The Little Book of Common Sense Investing. And I wouldn't be surprised if that shows up in the guru roulette wheel sometime in the future. Let's pull out a tool from the tool crib. This tool is for deep people. It's the Compound Annual Growth Rate Calculator. Now, you can either do it the easy way and go out to moneychimp.com and look for the Compound Annual Growth Rate Calculator. I'll have a link to it on the tools page of madmanmachine.com. Or you can use the following formula that I'm going to tell you about in your Excel spreadsheet. Now, what is the Compound Annual Growth Rate Calculator used for? Well, it helps tell you what percentage annually your investment has gone up, or hopefully not down. Let's say, for example, that you bought that exchange-traded fund, VTI, the Vanguard Total Stock Market Exchange-Traded Fund, on the very first day it became available, and I went out to finance.yahoo.com and looked at the historical prices for that, and it tells me that about June 15th, 2001 was the day that thing first traded, and it was at an adjusted price of $102.25. Well, that was 5 years and 8 months ago, or plus 5 plus 8 divided by 12 years ago, and the amount as of Friday, February 9th, is $143.02. So those are the three key numbers that help you calculate the compound annual growth rate. The initial amount, the ending amount, and the number of years of the investment. And here's how the formula works in Excel. Put each of those three numbers in a different cell. Then in the fourth cell, use the following formula. Say equals parentheses, ending amount divided by initial amount, end of parentheses, and then use the little caret symbol above the sixth key on your keyboard. That raises it to the power of something. And then starting parentheses, 1 divided by the years of investment, end of parentheses, minus 1. And then format that cell as a percentage, and you will see, if you've done this right, that the compound annual growth rate of VTI for those 5 years and 8 months is 6.12%. So that helps you calculate the compound annual growth rate for odd amounts of time. And it helps you compare your investment with other investments, perhaps even of different durations. Well, now you can be deep people, and it's all for free. A question in from a listener. It's listener Rob, and it goes like this. I got spooked by 9/11 and have been in money market funds since. Obviously a bad decision. I also got years of bad advice from my financial advisor and lost faith in the industry. I've read everything on IFA.com, and I understand and buy into the IFA.com concept. I'm designing a portfolio to match my risk capacity. I intend to buy and hold index funds, and I understand that it's impossible to time the market. On the other hand, I expect a broad correction in the market soon, and I'm wondering if I should wait to enter with my buy and hold portfolio of index funds. Yes, I understand the conflict between the IFA.com philosophy and my question. Any thoughts would be appreciated. Well, I have Mark Hebder from IFA on the line, and Mark, what do you think about Rob's question?
Well, first of all, it reinforces why we do the 12-step program. This is an addictive behavior, and what we prefer to call the prediction addiction. Everybody is addicted wanting to predict what the next outcome will be in a random distribution. Nobody can predict tomorrow's news, and that news is what's going to move the price tomorrow.
Well, I can sympathize with Rob's question, because if you look at any stocks since last July, the prices have just gone up in a straight line. Wouldn't it make sense for Rob to wait for a downturn and buy the stocks on sale?
Well, on the other hand, if you look at the S&P over the last 6 years, it took almost 6 years for it to come back to just equal to what it was 6 years ago. So you might say there's a lot of pent-up demand in there, and maybe we're just getting started. But what I would rather tell you is it just depends on tomorrow's news about capitalism, and on average, news about capitalism is positive, and that's all you can decide. Now listen, Rob said he already went back and he tested his risk capacity. Embedded in the analysis of his risk capacity is how much he's willing to lose in a short period of time. But now he's got to step up to the plate and actually be willing to lose it, because It's that loss possibility, the possibility of a loss, that is the economic reason for him to earn his return. So belly up to the bar and take it. Now, what I usually tell people is go to step four on the web, go to the print version, print it out, read it, and call me in the morning. It's like, you know, take two aspirin and call me in the morning. Because it's just there again, and you just have to read it over and over to learn what you didn't learn.
Well, I certainly appreciate you answering Rob's question, Mark, and thank you, Rob, for writing in. Anybody else has a question for Mark, feel free to send it to feedback@madmoneymachine.com or call the voicemail line, 206-734-4763. Thanks a lot, Mark.
You're welcome, Paul. Have a great day.
All right, you too. Regular listener, you know that Mark's written a book called Index Funds, a 12-step program for active investors. A couple shows ago, we played snippets from Mark's own podcast from Step 1, Active Investors. And since this show is called Deep People, I wanted to make sure that I got in Step 2, Nobel Laureates. Mark, there's a big difference between what the street says and what the research of many top scholars says, in particular those that have received the Nobel Prize. Can you tell us about this divide and what the impact is for today's investors?
Well, the primary divide between the street and what the Nobel laureates have determined, first and foremost, is huge. There's a very wide gap between the difference in what these two sides would recommend for the investor. Basically, it could be summarized as the street would like you to gamble, essentially, in the market and to pick stocks, pick managers, pick times, pick investment styles, essentially speculate on what's going to happen in the near term. The academics have come to a very different conclusion. Their conclusion is that you should basically accept the right amount of risk and then hold that risk, and eventually the investor will be rewarded for engaging in that level of risk.
All right, so what have the Nobel laureates proven through their research? Are there methodologies that do allow investors to beat the market?
The short answer to that is no, but I guess we want to elaborate a little bit. In fact, this is at the heart of my whole discovery here, is that virtually all these strategies are designed to, quote unquote, beat the market. But when you get a good look at the numbers, especially after fees and taxes and all the things that we're going to talk about later throughout this podcast series, it's just not happening. In fact, most people are beat up by the market instead of beating the market.
How does the research by these Nobel laureates help investors go through the 12-step process of moving from an active investor to smarter investors?
Well, the Nobel Prize awarded in 1990 basically recognized the application of the scientific method towards the investing process. And William Sharpe, Merton Miller, and Harry Markowitz were the three recipients that year. Their research opened up the eyes of many researchers to further investigate many areas of the market. Mr. Sharpe pointed out to investors that their returns was essentially tied to their risk. Harry Markowitz, in his paper called Portfolio Selection, urged investors to focus on diversification and getting the highest return for each level of risk. And Merton Miller helped identify what's known as the cost of capital for the firms. And firms that are in trouble have higher costs of capital, and that relates to a higher expected return for investors. And so combined, these three Nobel Prize-winning ideas get investors refocused on what's important and hopefully get them away from this concept that they can outsmart the market.
Well, thanks, Mark. If you'd like more information about these Nobel laureates and some of their papers, go out to ifa.com and click the Library tab at the top.
The Street would like you to gamble, essentially, in the market and to pick stocks, pick managers, pick times, pick investment styles, essentially speculate on what's going to happen in the near term.
All right, so Frank Barnico, who was our guru several shows ago, writes a column out at marketwatch.com. He writes a column called Frank Barnico's Media Blog, and he posted something on February 8th, said, "How's Jim Cramer doing?" He said, "When I read that Level 3 Communications had a big fourth quarter loss and announced it would eliminate 1,000 jobs to reduce costs, a bell went off in my head. LVLT, isn't that what Jim Cramer's number one speculative pick for the year? Didn't he talk about it on CNBC's Mad Money and write it about it on thestreet.com? He says, so for the heck of it and nothing else, I decided to see how Cramer's three risky recommendations have done since he wrote them up on January 5th. The answer is pretty darn well. The thimble of three stocks, too few for a basket, is up about 23%, trouncing the Dow Jones Industrial Average gain of about 1.4%. He says Level 3 was up 10.5%, Rite Aid was up 16%, Savient Pharmaceuticals has gained 32%. Good job, Mr. Cramer. Yeah, Frank, but the thing is, Cramer did not recommend these stocks at the end of last year. He recommended them late in the first week of January after they had already had a big run up. And I don't think it's fair to calculate someone's return before they even recommended the stock. I mean, if he could, then I could recommend some stocks for you, too. So as I calculated, what I've done is I've gone in and had someone actually tried to buy his picks the next morning after he mentioned them. The results compared to yours would, instead of 23% gain that you claim for him, would be an average of 12.6% gain. Still not bad. But in all, Cramer's had 9 stocks of the year so far. Remember, he had the speculative, the growth, and the value. If you took all 9 of those into a basket? As of Tuesday morning, February 13th, the average of all 9 of them is up 2.1%. And the Index Folio 100, as of the same time period, starting 4 of January, is up 2.8%. I think you'll see that the risk reward of buying those 9 stocks versus buying all stocks is probably not worth it. But I guess if you had a little mad money to play with, then playing with Cramer's picks of the year could be kind of fun, wouldn't it? coming up on the early March edition of The Mad Money Machine, to be released on February 27th. Learn all of the dark secrets of Jim Cramer as I review the book, Trading with the Enemy, by his former employee Nicholas Meyer, the book that Jim Cramer does not want you to read. I've read it, I know the secrets, and soon you will too. Download The Mad Money Machine, show 53, on February 27th. In the etc. section of the show, I've turned comments back on the website. I found a good spam filter, and so now I won't get as many people spamming the website. And all you have to do is find an area of one of the show notes or one of the postings on the website that you want to comment on. Click comment, type it in, include your email address, and click some buttons, and your comment will be entered into the show. Thank you. I have asked you to dig me, and you came out in big numbers. There have been 57 people that have dug the Mad Money Machine, but strangely, the total that shows up keep going down. It got up to 42 or something, and now it's down to 24 digs. I don't understand how the dig process works, but I'd appreciate it if you'd go out to the madmoneymachine.com website, and up at the top right-hand corner, click Dig Me, and enter your vote for the show. I also asked you to vote for how frequently do you want a new Mad Money Machine show to be released. Let me go take a look at the results right now. 76 people have voted. 3 people said rarely. No people, 0, said once a month. Just not a popular time frequency for shows to be released. 30%, let me put it, said twice a month, basically every other week, right? And all of the remainder said once a week or more frequently. 33% said once a week, 16% said twice a week, 17% said daily. I'll keep the poll out there in case you want to register your vote. But as I look at this then, fully 66% or 2/3 of all the people voting said once a week or more frequently. Well, that is not what I expected. I expected it to be more heavily swayed towards once a week or less frequently. And I certainly didn't expect 17% of the people to say daily. Boy, I just don't think I could do a daily show. I appreciate all the votes that said you'd like to hear it more often. I'll do some thinking about it and see what I can come up with. Well, I want to thank you so much for downloading this show and listening to it. This has been Paul Douglas Boyer, saying it takes money to make money, and it takes deep people to make a Mad Money Machine. Please go to our sponsor, IFA.com, and keep your feedback coming. It's what keeps me going. All music from the PodSafe Music Network, including this one from Deep Purple, here on this show, Deep People.